Well, hello again, and welcome to another of our Berg Bites. This one's slightly different because it arises from a story that you will read in this week's Berg newsletter about a recent decision of a court in Germany, which turned down a request from a trade union that was involved with the Adidas company, where the trade union was looking for the company to give them the professional email addresses of employees so they could contact employees, most of whom are apparently working from home. And this raised a question, and a number of you have asked me the question, well, what rights do trade unions in Germany have to information about employees? I mean, what access do they have? And quite often, as many of you watching this and reading the newsletter will know, this issue comes up in European Works Councils, where we get asked, can we have the email addresses of all of your employees in Europe? So we, the European Works Council, can communicate with them. So this question of trade union access to the addresses, the email addresses of individual employees is an issue that stretches beyond Germany. Now, my understanding is that German law is based on the notion that people are all together in a physical workplace, and the union is able to walk around the physical workplace and say, "Hello, Hans, how are you today?" And so, no, I'm not sure if my German is particularly good in that regard, but you get the point that people can, and trade union representatives, shop stewards, or whatever they're called, can walk around and introduce themselves to people and to new employees and so on. But how do you do that in a virtual world if you don't have access to people because they're working remotely? And of course, there's also the complication that in not just in Germany, but in many other European countries, your house and the privacy of your house is protected by your constitutional rights. So nobody has the right to come near your house or without your permission. So I thought it'd be worthwhile discussing these issues with somebody who knows a lot more about Germany and German trade unions and German law than I do. So I'm joined today by Burkhard. Now, I can never get these names right, but Burkhard Goffert, if I got that correctly, tell me. If not, who's part of whose German law firm is part of the Jus Laboris network that we have been working with for many, many years. So, first of all, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. I gather that it's 25 degrees outside there in Germany at the moment, and you would rather be on your terrace with a nice glass of cold white wine than sitting here talking to us, but be that as it may. So, explain to me for a start, what rights do German trade unions have under the German Constitution and the German law to information about employees? And what rights do they have about access to employees?
Sure. Tom, thanks for reaching out. Highly interesting question in these times where, like, everybody is trying to find out, how to effectively organize your union or works council activities, whether, forming an opinion within a works council, whether having votes, whether agreeing to agreements, whether having mediations, even court hearings are being virtualized. And now we have the first case where we're discussing the right of access. And we have two levels on how we look at this. One is a statutory level, which simply grants union an access to employees. And access in that law, that's the Works Council law, interestingly. So it's part of the Works Council Act, is meant to be a physical access. And I think it's very important that, when we look at this decision, this specific decision, it's mainly guided by statutory law, and statutory law is simply talking about a physical access and not sharing of data, yeah, in some sense. Now, in interpreting the statutory law in light of where we are today in the pandemic, in the restrictions that we see, of course, we have to go beyond. And then we look at our constitution, and our constitution specific rights granted to the unions, which you will only understand as a post-war reaction to the limitation and basically abolishment of union activities during the Hitler regime. When Hitler took over the unions and did some kind of party organization out of what used to be unions before. So after the Hitler time in our constitution, you know, there was this very strong feeling of having an unrestricted constitutional right of union activity. And that's very interesting because we have very few rights in the constitution that are so unrestricted, like it's the activity of the unions. Is an amazing thing. And the reason is that the unions were a very strong part of the resistance against Hitler. So they had a very strong say in bringing about our constitution. And the only border of what we call a positive right to be a member of the union is the right of an individual not to be a member of a union. So the government in the end cannot interfere with the union rights. It can only be like the individual who would say, wait a minute, I don't want to be a member of the union. So this is the only limit of this right. Now, how do we...
So in Germany, Burkhard, like there's no such thing as a union shop. So in other words, it cannot be a condition of your employment that you have to be a member of the union.
Well, there is companies in Germany in the automotive industry where people say that it is important to be a union member in order to become an employee. And I don't want to expand on this for obvious reasons. But outside of this, you're absolutely right. It's not a closed shop or anything of that kind, but it's your own liberty on whether you want to be a member with the unions or not. And you can at any time opt in, opt out, whatever you want to do. It's your freedom. But of course, in the moment where you are a union member or when you are willing, and that's important here, when you're willing to make sure that there's no limitations on the union to be able to access you. And in the old world that we all lived in was to physically see you, to have a meeting with you, even visit you at your workplace on site. But in the new world that we will be coming in, the virtual world, there must be, and that's my reading of all these decisions, there must be some effective way for unions to be able to contact their members or potential members. And the only limitation is that someone is saying, I don't want to be a member of the union. I don't want to be contacted.
Yeah. Let me take a step back. I mean, I presume that, for example, whatever the law may or may not say, that the practice in many companies was that the HR director or the local HR guy would say to the union guy, look, next Monday we have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 new people starting with us and whatever, right? And there may be an induction program and the union guy would come to the induction program and say, hello, I'm from Verdi or I'm from Mikey Metal or whatever. And, that was the way it works in practice, I presume.
Well, I would say, in the 1950s and 1960s, you're absolutely right, maybe even in the 1970s, but in the recent times, you would hardly see this anymore. Yeah, it is more...
Why would you not see it?
Because the labor directors will not actively, apart from some industries, very limited industry, they will not actively interfere with this process anymore. They just leave it to your own decision. If you enter a premise, you would normally see, some leaflets where you can pick a form and sign. Yeah. And only very few companies, I don't want to name them here, but very few companies would hand over the signature form together with the employment agreement.
Okay. So what we're saying is that one way or the other, that in a physical workplace, the union representative could approach the employee and say, hey, do you want to join IG Metall? Do you want to join Verdi? Whatever it is, right? And blah, 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 blah. By the way, all the rest of your workmates are members, so it would be a good idea for you to be a member as well, right? I understand that stuff, right? So suddenly we're in this virtual world. And You know, I mean, there are two aspects to this. First of all, just a normal trade union activity of the union communicating with its existing members. You know, here's what's happening, here's what's going on, here's what you need to be aware of. And of course, there's a second aspect, which is new people joining the company. How do we sign them up as union members? Now, presumably in the first instance, communicating with existing union members, the union would already have contact email details and so on. Yes,
exactly. Because, you know, once you sign the form, you give your personal data, you have the email address, whether you want to use your private address or the company address, whatever address you fill in, the union has an equal and unrestricted way of contacting you. That's easy. Okay. I think that the critical thing is you are a new hire or you're an existing employee. I mean, you may have 20 years of service, but suddenly have an interest in becoming a member of the union, or the union, you know, is trying to shop around and see whether they can increase membership, even within the existing staff. Yeah. And it's important because, you know, one piece of background is that during the COVID pandemic, we've seen a decline in union membership because it's quite expensive to be a member of the union. You have to pay about 1% of your monthly salary as a membership fee. And in times, you know, unemployment, short-term work, general, you know, people being more selective on their outside activities, maybe, you know, a lot of people have decided being a member of the union is not worth it or it's too expensive. So the unions have trouble with maintaining their membership. Yeah.
And so, for instance, can the Works Council, I presume a Works Council has all of the email addresses of all of the employees, can they not give them to the union?
No, this would be a violation of law, basically of the data protection laws, because they have received this data for a specific purpose, which is doing Works Council activity on site, sharing it with the unions without a specific consent of the individual employees would be outside of the right of usage of the data, and it would be a severe infringement of the data protection laws if they did so.
So they would be making use of data for a purpose other than for which they were given the data.
Correct.
In the first
Correct.
Place. So works councils cannot pass data to the union.
No.
So basically, as I understand this Adidas case, the courts, and they're not top courts, they're regional local courts or whatever, right? Are saying to Adidas, Adidas management was saying, we can't give you, Mr. Union, the email addresses of new employees because we believe that would be a data breach, right? And the court is saying, we support you, Adidas, but you have some reservations about the robustness or the strength of that judgment.
Well, on the first level, this is a correct judgment because it simply says that, you know, an employer is not under no obligation. That's the first question, under no obligation to hand out the data, because the Works Council Act would only require physical access and not virtual access. And the second level, an employer who would simply send out all his contact details to a union would in turn also be in infringement with the data protection, because nobody who signs an employment agreement would have consented in sending out your personal data to some outside organization, even if it's the unions. Yeah. So that would be very clear. From that point of view, the judgment is absolutely correct. The question is, you know, is it the end of the story? Because the German constitution requires an effective means of protecting the rights of the unions. And even though the statutory law, when it talks about access, may not be read as virtual access. Yeah, let's put this to aside for a moment, because it's an interpretation question of a law. Yeah. And you may then go to the question, you know, would we have to amend the law and so on and so forth? But in on the first black letter law view, it's very clear access is not virtual access. And therefore, the judgment is right. However, it is a lack of effectiveness of the constitutional rights of the union, and it needs to be cured. Whether it needs to be cured by government and parliamentary process, or whether it can be cured by interpretation, that's the big question. I personally believe that handing out data will always infringe with the the right of someone not to be a union member and infringe with the data protection laws. On the other hand, in following the law, an employer may be required to create some kind of virtual exchange possibility for the unions, for example, on an intranet site, where the unions may have a chance to place some information about becoming a union member, and then having a kind of a click button or whatever it is, or at least a contact detail where the unions can be contacted, so they have an access in a virtual world. I think that is that will be necessary in the future, whether by very law or by interpretation. You will find a with 200 different answers.
What you're saying, Burkhard, is that obviously employers are never going to be able to give unions the work email addresses of people, but the employer could create some sort of intranet portal where the unions could advertise their availability, right, and employees could access that. But you know,
but
in
Tom,
a way,
the question is, Tom, is whether it is something where you say an employer can do this,
or
whether
must
you
do
go
it
as far as to say, well, should be required to, in order to fulfill the necessities under the Constitution. And I think I have a tendency to say that if there is a possibility to do so technically, yeah, then it needs to be done.
But isn't the real problem, I understand that, right? I understand what you're saying there. But isn't the real problem for the unions is that this requires employees to proactively go to the portal and, you know, join the union, so to speak. Yeah, look, I know from my own experiences, and you know from your years of experience, that quite often you need the shop steward or whatever to go up to you and say, come on now, Burkhard, you know, go and sign the bloody form here. Right. And, you know, quite frankly, where that physical ability to approach somebody, and I won't call it twist their arm, but, you know. But
I think that the Constitution is not good for twisting arms, you know.
Well, come on. No, yeah, no. Look, you know the realities of life as well as I do. Come on.
But is, you see, there is some, and create some platform.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there needs to be some platform, and if you enter a physical building of a unionized employer in Germany, even in the entry hall, you will find the union information with everything, and you will find, as you're absolutely right, a union representative contacting people from time to time. By the way, they have the right to speak on shop assemblies, which you can do virtually. And they can even speak on, you know, department assemblies. So they're not completely off from contacting people. But you know what we are discussing here is if we go away from the COVID scenario, which is some kind of unusual and, you know, extraordinary situation, but you go into a virtual world where maybe there is no physical premise anymore.
Yeah.
Your question is even more rightly placed, because the shop steward in that case can only be a virtual person contacting you virtually and twist your arm virtually, so to say.
I just had a conversation earlier this afternoon with a very, very well-known large multinational around these very issues about what I call the digital dispersion of work, where, you know, work can be done other than in these physical buildings anymore. And yeah, I think that creates enormous issues for a trade union. But I mean, coming back to the immediate German situation, let me ask you a question. As I understand it, there's a, you know, probably nothing much is going to happen in Germany because there's a general election in September. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe earlier. We don't know.
Yeah. And then when you look,
September.
Yeah. And, you know, look, generally in politics, you find that not much happens in 3 or 4 months before an election, you know. So, would you see government action on this issue?
We see some government action at the moment in reforming our Works Council Act. The reason is, you know, we are in what we call the Grand Coalition, where the Labour Minister is from the Social Democratic Party, and they do one proposal after the other. They have been doing over the last 8 years, and they're very successful lawmakers, by the way. They're very effective, successful lawmakers on the Social Democratic side, whether it helps them in the political process or not. And they have put forward a proposal for a new, a more effective Works Constitution Act. The reason why I'm not so sure something will really happen is, you know, in the setting that we're discussing, it's positive for the unions if there's virtual access. But there's other situations like voting, having assemblies, and so on, where employers would like to have more virtual settings than before. Like, you know, we would like our Works Council not to travel anymore, but just to meet virtually. Yeah. We'd like to blah blah blah. So to save cost in the end, yeah. But then, you know, the left side of the house would normally say, wait a minute, you know, we have to have physical meetings, blah, blah, blah. It's a democratic process. So it's a bit of a two-sided sword. If you ask for virtual access on the one side, you may have to give in on the virtual meetings on the other, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think that you can have virtual world only halfway.
Yeah, no, well, and, my own view is that the unions and works councils are extremely reluctant about going into a virtual world,
yeah,
because a great deal of their power and influence grows out of the in-person,
yeah,
physical meeting.
Mobilization doesn't work.
So listen, let me conclude by asking you a question, which has got absolutely nothing to do with what we've been talking about. Right? And the question is this. We are seeing the end of the Angela Merkel era in Germany. This is her last, you know, she's not standing for election again and so on. What do you think is going to happen in the future?
Life will go on. But,
well, of course life will go on. But will it be a green life is what I'm asking you. Will the next Chancellor of Germany be a green?
I think it is already, because, you know, the main issues beyond COVID is we have an energy revolution, we have a globalization revolution, we have an ecologic revolution. You know, we have a lot of issues that the majority of the Germans would like to be tackled, even in industry. If you speak to industry leaders, they say, you know, we have to cope with digitalization, with globalization, global warming, and so on. And there are huge chances for our industry to be industry leaders and remain industry leaders if we are the first runners on all these topics. So having a green government is not a shocker to us anymore. Angela Merkel had an interview last night where she said, like, her own party has no guarantee to be forming the government. You know, there's no promise in the constitution for her party to be the formers of the government. She said this last night in the TV. I think she has already accepted the fact that most likely her successor will not be from her own party.
So are we going to see the first green prime minister, chancellor, call it what you will, in Europe, in Germany, in September?
I would put it this way. If so, why not in Germany? Because we have that the Green Party is not what it used to be 30 years ago. It is a more almost conservative, middle class, liberal party with a strong emphasis on modernizing the industry, more future oriented way. Yeah. And, you know, they will always have to form coalition with someone or the other, and which is a balance. I think if you go around my office building at the moment, you ask 10 people, 10 people will tell you it's no problem.
So will you be voting green?
I never in my life.
Yeah. Listen, Burkhard, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Go outside, have that nice cold glass of white wine. We'll talk to you again. Much appreciated.
I will cheer on the unions in your name.
Much appreciated. And when we can get back to having an in-person bird meeting in Sitges, you're on the invitation list. See you soon.
I'm delighted to come over. Thank you so much. And stay healthy and safe, everybody. Yep.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.